Well, today, of course, we celebrate the Feast of the Transfiguration, and it's kind of a bonus because we get to do it twice this year, right? We got to do it at the end of Epiphany, and then this is one of those odd years where the Feast of the Transfiguration actually falls on a Sunday, so we get to hear that gospel twice. Now, back in the end of Epiphany, we heard it from Matthew, and today we heard it from Luke, and there's a few subtle differences between the accounts, but they're mostly the same. But the main point of the story of the transfiguration of Jesus is this idea of seeing somebody in a different light, right? Have you ever had this happen to you where you thought you knew somebody until you saw them in some kind of setting that was way out of the context that you're used to seeing them in, and then you had a very different opinion of them? Has that ever happened to you? That sort of thing happens to me all the time as a priest, I have found. When people run into me kind of out in the wild when I'm not in my usual disguise. Now this, I realize that for a lot of you here at Holy Cross, that's not so much of an issue because you knew me when, right? You knew me before I was ordained, so it's not quite so shocking. But in some of the other parishes that I serve, it's unusual for folks to see me outside of even wearing a collar. It's so strange for some folks that they don't even recognize me. I went to a Padres game, okay, not too long ago. I was given tickets by some members of St. Bart's, where I was serving at the time. They invited me to come, and when I came to the game in my Padres hat, my Padres gear, you know, as one would, I sat down next to them, and they didn't know who I was. Like, okay, did you expect I was going to come in vestments to the Padres game? This also happened to me back when I was doing homeless youth ministry in New York City. I was working, my day job was working as an administrative faculty at a small Christian liberal arts college. And being from the West Coast, living on the East Coast for the first time in my life, I really embraced this idea of wearing nice clothes because, you know, you don't really do that out here in California. And so I would dress kind of snazzy, kind of professorial, you might say. And but I was also working with homeless youth on the weekends. And every now and then I would run into some of the homeless youth while wearing my professor clothes, and they would give me the strangest look, like, what are you doing? Why are you wearing that? But these sort of things are reminders, I think, to us that we tend to kind of pigeonhole people, right? We kind of tend to put people in a box in the way that we understand them and what we expect from them. And these sort of encounters remind us that people don't always fit in the boxes that we put them in. People don't always, there's a complexity to people that's beyond the way that we imagine them to be. I think this is something that applies to other people, but it can also apply to us in our own lives, right? We may get used to living in certain roles or positions. We may be so accustomed to seeing ourselves in a certain way that we might then have a change in our life circumstances and find that we have to shift the way that we see ourselves. I know this happens a lot to folks in the military, for example. You get so used to seeing yourself as a Marine or a sailor or something like that, that when you get out and become a civilian, it's a very tough adjustment to see yourself as a dirty, nasty civilian, right? I think this is part of the impetus behind a lot of midlife crises, right? That struggle to take on a new identity. And so this story about the transfiguration is about Jesus and his disciples seeing Jesus for who he really is in a way that they had not seen him before. But I think it's an event that doesn't just happen to the disciples, it also happens to Jesus. It's a moment where Jesus is able to see himself in a different light. And you can see that when you look at the text. And it says that moment of transfiguration happened when he was praying. While he was praying, he then took on this new form, this new identity. That has a lot to speak to us, I believe. It's through prayer, it's through connection with God that we are given the ability to see and the ability to live into our true identity. And of course, we know that the transfiguration in the story of Jesus' life comes right at the time before he would set off to Jerusalem to do what he was called to do. And so Jesus really needed to have this clear sense of who he was before he was going to enter into this chaotic and uncertain and certainly trying time. He needed to know who he was. So what is Jesus' true identity? What does the story have to say to us about who Jesus really is? Well, we see Moses and Elijah there with him. And I think that's an important part of Jesus' identity, in that he is linked to that tradition of the prophets, the great prophets of the people of Israel. We have pretty much the two superstars, right? Moses and Elijah. And they're here at this sort of summit meeting of the great prophets. And it's a symbol, it's a sign that Jesus is continuing that tradition of the prophets. But I think it's about more than just that. Because Jesus isn't just a prophet. He's not just another one of the prophets in this line. He's bringing about something new, something that's never been seen before. You see, the mission of the prophets was to call God's people back into relationship with God, where they had strayed away. With Jesus, this is God taking the initiative, not just calling people back into relationship, but God saying, I'm going to come down there and recreate that relationship on my own initiative. I've given you guys enough chances, right? I'm going to come down here and get it done myself. Jesus' mission shows God taking on that initiative in human form. And the story says the disciples saw his glory, his doxa. That's the Greek word there. And that might sound kind of like a kind of a familiar word, right? Because what's that song that we sing at the offertory? The doxology, right? Praise God from whom all blessings flow. It's recognizing God's glory in created things. That's what the disciples are seeing in Jesus at that moment. And that's a hard thing for a lot of us to understand, as it was for the disciples at the time. That God is, in fact, that full glory of God is, in fact, present through the created order, through created things, through and in human beings. We tend to want to put God in a box, just like we tend to want to put people in a box, right? We want a God that we can comprehend. We want a God that we can understand. And that's understandable, right? That's exactly what Peter does in this story. And I want to give Peter some credit. We give Peter a lot of grief, and sometimes it's justified. And Luke, this is one of the differences between Matthew and Luke, right? Luke takes extra care to put a jab at Peter and says, he makes sure to say, he did not know what he was talking about. But what is Peter doing? He is making sense of God, making sense of Jesus in a way that he is familiar with. He sees Moses, he sees Elijah, he sees Jesus. To him, it makes perfect sense. Oh, let's build some tents for these three to live in. Let's hold on to God. Let's make a dwelling for God so that we can hold on to God in a way that we can understand. Literally, let's domesticate God, right? Build God a house so that we can hold on to God. And I suppose the question for us today is, do we really want a God that can be domesticated by our sense of expectation, by our sense of what God is supposed to be like? Or do we really want a God that's bigger than that, that's wilder than that? I love that famous line from the Chronicles of Narnia by C.S. Lewis, where he's talking about, there's a passage where one of the characters is talking about Aslan, who of course is the Christ figure in this world of Narnia. And some of the animals there in Narnia are talking to the children who've come to Narnia about how Aslan is the true king, the true god of this world, and not the witch, not the ice queen. But he's a lion, right? And so the children are kind of put off by this idea that a lion could be this benevolent, loving god. And so there's this famous passage from The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, where Mr. Beaver is talking to Susan, one of the children. And he says, "Aslan is a lion, the great lion." "Ooh," said Susan, "I thought he was a man. Is he quite safe? I shall feel rather nervous about meeting a lion." "Safe?" said Mr. Beaver. "Who said anything about safe? Of course he isn't safe, but he's good. He's not safe, but he's good." Are we looking for a God that is safe? Are we looking for a God that is good? And so the Transfiguration story reveals to us how God defies our expectations of what God can be like, and how we can see that divine light, that divine glory, that doxa, not only in Jesus, but in ourselves and in each other. How often do we try to fit people into boxes or try to understand them? I've recently entered into a new spiritual directing relationship with a new spiritual director, and as part of one of our first meetings, she gave me this list of what she considers the qualities of spiritual companionship. And it's a list of kind of this versus that statements. And the one that really stuck out to me is that a spiritual companion respects disorder and confusion rather than imposing order and logic. So to really spiritually journey alongside someone is not to impose our sense of order or logic on them, but to trust the process, to respect that sometimes confusion, even confusion and disorder, can lead to greater understanding. We prayed a collect at the beginning of our service today where we asked to be delivered from disquietude, and sometimes that's appropriate, but I wonder if perhaps we need to be disquieted just a little bit in order to truly see Jesus, in order to truly see Jesus in each other, to be taken out of our tents, out of our dwellings, and to see that God, that wild God, that not safe God, but that good God, out on the road. And so today, as we hear once again that story of the glory of God being revealed in the person of Jesus, I pray that God would open our eyes to reveal that glory of Christ that became visible on that mountaintop, not just on the mountaintop, not just in the experiences where we would expect to find God, but in all the things and all the people and all the places that we encounter down here in the valley of our lives as well. And I pray this with you in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit.